Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Montana has been the center of a drug battle for a lot of years. These illicit drugs are very dangerous, illicit drugs. Why are we at, well, I don't know, a regional center, so to speak? I think there are a lot of Western states that are being impacted by an increased gang activity, by, of course, what happened during the Biden administration, those wide open borders. That really encouraged the drug cartels. They made a lot of territory gains during those last 4 years, fighting back, as we always have in Montana, against these. We're going to talk about that today in great detail. And we'll probably have a few other things on the plate as well, because in studio is Stacey Zim. Now, you remember chatting with her and getting to know her and probably even voting for her as she ran for Congress at Eastern District. Well, she's a former director of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency operations in Montana. And we've got a lot to talk about that today on Voices of Montana. The drug issue, I don't know if we can wax philosophically about it. We might, because, you know, that's part of the discussion about, you know, why is there such a presence for drugs in our life and such a need in the United States? Or I shouldn't say need, certainly such a want, I guess I'll put it that way. Stacey Zim is joining us here, former director of, as I mentioned, the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency operations in Montana. That's kind of a heady thing to be. You know, Stacey, good morning. How you doing?
Oh, good morning, and thank you very much for having me.
Good to see you again. I appreciate you coming in. We kind of hooked up yesterday, and I've been wanting to chat with you and get your impressions, because you were, former DEA agent, but you ran for Congress, and that was your first time. And I'm just curious as to all those impressions that you take away from that. You meet a lot of people. You learn a lot of things. And I want to get to that. And so congratulations, a race well run.
Thank you.
Let's go to our drug situation, though, just to kick things off. You have been around speaking as well with all this experience and knowledge about drugs and battling drugs as a DEA agent in Montana. What do you make now of these recent arrests of the TDA gang? We see not only that, but there's some copycat gang activity, I think, going on. Missoula's dealing with a youth gang activity and their little gang turf going on. When we don't address those things, I think, head on, these are the kinds of leakage, I'm going to say, that happens in our communities.
No, that is true. Going to the gangs, we saw that in Yellowstone County a couple of years ago, where we start seeing tagging. And what is tagging is when individuals will spray paint symbols or letters on certain street corners or on buildings. And what they're doing is actually planting their flag and seeing if it stays there. And unfortunately, at the time, law enforcement kind of took a look at it and like, no biggie. We did have a detective that had experience, that had worked in California, that recognized, hey, this is happening, brought it to everyone's attention. And so when I was still with DEA, with the help of the U.S. Attorney's Office, we rounded up everyone and said, you know what, we're going to push back. We started doing a deep dive into what was happening and started realizing we have some gang members actively sniffing around here and trying to recruit these young kids, these kids that are out on the streets, some of the individuals that are linked to the Native American community that are floating between Yellowstone County and the reservations. And so what we had to do was start coming up with operations and pushing back and driving them back down. That's what you're seeing in Missoula. The same situation taking place. Law enforcement is so inundated with all other crime, and all of a sudden it's right there underneath their nose, like, oh, how did this happen? And so they're going to have to start pushing back. And it's not going to stop there, because Montana is a free-for-all. Not one certain cartel controls this territory. Not one certain gang controls this territory. So it's a free-for-all. People are like going, ooh, Montana, we can make some money there. There's like law enforcement up there. There's wide open spaces. We can go and kind of blend into the culture and the communities and then start committing our crimes.
Is there a good side to that? The fact that they don't have a single dominant gang established here, does that mean that law enforcement then has a more of an ample opportunity to push back against that?
Yes, as long as law enforcement, as long as the community, as long as the state is paying attention. So yes, but the fact is that they're not rooted here yet is like a sigh of relief. But we have to be the wolves protecting the sheep, and we have to be on guard because they are outside our borders and they're waiting to come in.
I'm going to talk about your experience down the road here a little bit too, but 23 years, 20 plus years in this battlefield, so to speak. What are effective pushback operations? What do you see local people? Well, I think we've seen that in you know, these sanctuary cities, so to speak, push back against effective operations. In your mind, what are effective pushback operations?
Well, for example, your laws and stuff. I mean, we cannot be subtle. If you see a crime, that crime gets committed, it has to be prosecuted and it has to be adjudicated and there has to be some jail time. We have a jail problem here. Mm-hmm. We have a jail problem at our local area. We have a jail problem at the state level. At least the feds are moving their prisoners around, and unfortunately, you know, they're going to Arizona. But the fact is that we have to be diligent. But Montana we're light years away. Meaning we're still catching up to what's happening underneath our noses. Yeah. And it's not the Joe Bob is, you know, driving down and then, well, I'll back that out real quick.
But it's not the cliche thing.
It's not the cliche. And yeah. The thing is, though, we are becoming a little city that has major crime coming in and we're not prepared for it. Now, I'm not saying law enforcement's not doing anything. I'm just saying that the mentality is not here yet. Law enforcement is aware if it's taking place, but the community's like going, wait a minute, we do kind of have a crime problem, but not in my backyard. It's not happening to me, so it doesn't impact me. So when you see these mill levies come out with taxation for more security, people are like, no more taxes. But yet we have to take a look back and say, where do we need to put our monies? And that's not – we need to start focusing on that. We also, there was a bill that just went to Helena. It passed yesterday at the representative level where asylum, people on asylum are able to get driver's license now. And if that gets pushed to the Senate and it gets passed, what we have just done is opened up the door for illegals to come in here, get driver's permit, and then that will also segregate into voting. It's things like that that we have to be wise and we had to push it back against, because the other side, whether it's nefarious acts, is always creeping in. So that's one thing that the community can start doing is calling the representatives and be diligent of what they're voting for.
Yeah, I appreciate that, too, because it is on the public. We can drive policy in this country. We just have to be in touch with the people we elect, so to speak, and keep them accountable. This is part of the message. Stacy Zinn is with us again, former candidate for Congress, former DEA agent, 20 some years out there in the field internationally as well. We'll appreciate that experience here too. You're speaking at the Montana Agri Women Conference. They've got a seminar this weekend. It's March 29th. It'll be in Billings here as well. Of course, this is kind of your home area. What's your message? In light of what we're kind of talking about here, to pay attention, to be aware of these signs, what's your message to them?
We want to bring attention to the criminal element that may impact our younger generation of females. Females that are maybe working in the farming industry, rural area, and then maybe decide they're going to go to college and go to Bozeman, Missoula or here in Billings. And we want to give them tips on what to look for when you go out to eat, when you're in a bar setting, what to do and what not to do. We want to educate them on the types of drugs that are out there. We still have the date rape drug that can easily blend into someone's drink and they won't even know that they're drinking it. We have new drugs coming in to the area of mixtures of hallucinogenic type drugs. Yes. Of course, we have fentanyl and you have meth and stuff like that. Marijuana, we should be calling it THC now. So we want to educate the public about that. Also, we have nefarious people that are coming into the area, and we want to give them signs and symptoms of how to protect yourself. When you're walking to a car, how you're holding your purse, how you're holding your keys in your hands in a fist between your fingers and stuff. Parking in a lighted area, parking where you're near security cameras. So we just want to go back to the basis and start building that foundation for those young women that might not be aware of there's people out there to harm them.
When you chat with them and they hear your conversation and they come up and say, these are the things that I wasn't aware of or I didn't know. What does that tell you? What does that tell you about education about these types of things in our country?
Well, unfortunately, security, drugs, and stuff, it's pretty much the last thing that parents will discuss with their kids. Mm-hmm. They don't think about it. They're raising their family. They're thinking about their immediate surrounding. If it's not in their face, they're not discussing it. Mm-hmm. And also ignorance. Ignorance is bliss out there. And there's some areas where they're not touched by the crime, harmful crime that we do see here in the larger city. So when they come and say, oh, I didn't think about that, then that gives me hope that I planted that seed that now they'll start thinking about it. And I hate to paint the scenario that everything's all black.
Right. You don't want to create fear.
Correct.
You want to create a sense of, you know, comfort or calm
awareness.
Over that. Yeah.
Yes. I want to create awareness because I don't want anyone to say, gosh, I don't want to look back and go, gosh, I should have shared that information. And that's one of the reasons why I still get out there and have these conversations, because I have too much knowledge, both in my foreign in my domestic experience, to just kind of shut it off.
Yeah.
If I can help someone, then that's what I'm do. I'm a people pleaser.
Well, and I think we have known each other for a couple of years now.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, I've always been impressed about that aspect, is your willingness to share those things, but also the willingness of people to come up and want to. It's not like you have to drum it into them anymore. I think there's that creation of awareness, I think, is having an impact.
It's people starting to open up their eyes. They're starting to see, whether it's the news or radio, they're hearing about it, reading about it on social media. They're seeing it outside of Montana, and they're hearing whispers of being here. And when they listen to my conversation or anyone else that's talking about this, they're like, wow, it is actually here. How do I prepare myself? So if I can empower someone, that ability just to think, pause and digest, then absolutely, that's worth it.
How do they, and again, this gets kind of philosophical too, we talk about drugs, but how do parents in particular educate their kids without scaring their kids? How do they make them aware and empower them to overcome the challenges of illicit drugs in their communities?
First, it starts with the communication. I was in the southeastern part of Montana, elementary school, and they said, we want you to talk to our kindergartners. And
wow,
I'm like,
really?
I'm yeah. like, oh, okay, here we go. And so they had them in an auditorium setting, and I'm standing in front of them. I said, hey, kids, how many of y'all have heard the word drugs? And you saw some hands shoot up. And I'm like, my eyes are getting big, and the teacher's kind of looking around. I'm like, okay, what have you heard? And I call on one little boy. He goes, Coors Light. And then the little girl goes, my mommy's, sometimes drinking alcohol when we're driving. And I'm like, oh, Lordy, it's too much information. I say this teasingly, but these kids pick up little nuggets of information along the way. We talked to fourth graders here about marijuana. And we had found, unfortunately, the kids were starting to talk about marijuana at the fourth and fifth grade level. So parents need to kind of sit down at the kitchen table and say, hey, just play dumb. Hey, this girl was on the radio. She's talking something about dab or some type of honey wax. What have you heard that? And then start picking your brain. But before you ask that question, make sure you know the answer. So if you have to get on Google and search out some of these drugs and stuff and the names and the slang names, do that. Not that I'm advocating for Google, but that's, mm-hmm. That's a useful encyclopedia when it comes to drug use. And then just start having those conversations. Now, if you have like a teenager and they just kind of roll their eyes and then change the conversation, then circle back around a day or two later. But keep on them. And then just continue that conversation until you get some type of reaction. If they completely shut you out, that's a warning sign. Now, a lot of these kids will they'll kind of look at mom or dad or their guardian, and then they'll start communicating, and then go with it, flow with it, develop that line of communication. And then so that when you do hear or see something, you say, hey, Sally, this is happening. Do you know anything about it?
I like that. They have to be prepared not only to know what the answer, but how to move forward when they get an answer that they don't like, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they can call me if they ever like, oh, Stacy, we just stepped in it. So tell me, you know, what do I do or what is this stuff? Or, hey, we have a problem here.
Read a recent old statistic about how they're blending fentanyl into a lot of drugs. And 70% of the stimulant overdoses in this country are now fentanyl related. And what a dangerous drug that is. But that's not the only one out there. There's been a decrease in fentanyl seizures. And a lot of that has to do with the Trump administration changing the dynamic. And I'm very appreciative of that. But there's something backfilling that as well. We'll talk about that. Stacy Zinn is with us, former director of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency Operations in Montana, DEA agent. I just put on your little board. We have a welcome board, Stacy, and it just says now defender. And you are, and I appreciate that very much.
That's so cool. Thank you.
Yeah, and it's obvious. People are responding here on the text line as well. Let me get some of those messages out, and then we got a phone call to go to. This I called a war on drugs will never be won. There is too much money in it, law enforcement, politicians involved in the trade. That is not incorrect, I think. I think there's corruption that moves this thing forward, so to speak, and that's hard to deal with. That's hard to call out, but it's got to be done. Another one here.
Wait. Before we let's go on the war on drugs and stuff. That kind of gets me riled up because
good.
Because okay, yes, it's right. With the war on drugs, we're always facing it. However, during the Obama administration, they pulled back the sentencing guidelines on these drug traffickers. What they did was harm law enforcement, and they started getting a slap on the wrist. If they're supposed to go in 5 years, they got cut into like two years and some months. We stopped. These people stopped talking. That means that they weren't talking to law enforcement. We weren't able to get our confidential sources. Therefore, we were stuck. Basically, during the Obama administration, the war on drugs wasn't a war. It was a divert your eyes type situation. If you see what happened before Obama, and then you saw how crime started really jumping up, you started seeing more individuals on drugs. So the war on drugs actually works to a certain degree. We're not going to finish the war as long as there's a demand for it, but at least we can push it back. And we're in the place right now because of the Obama years. So don't get me started on the war on drugs.
In fact, we did get you started on the war on drugs, and I appreciate that. I mean, that is something that is staring us right in the face. When we don't enforce our laws, just as you said, they are ineffective all the way down the line, so to speak. There have been, again, mostly it's those sanctuary states and sanctuary cities that are arresting illegals with criminal backgrounds,
yes,
releasing them back into the public even after they have committed crimes in this country. I can't imagine anybody thinking that that is a policy that is beneficial to our society.
No, not at all. Yeah. I mean, they've already broken the law. The illegals that are here have broken the law. That's a check mark of a criminal type situation. When we have these sanctuary cities that then to say, oh, we're just going, or the NGOs that will harbor them and keep them and then give them benefits, what does that say to our rural areas that are struggling? What does that say to our Native American community that is struggling? What's here in Yellowstone County, the average salary is, you know, I don't know off the top of my head, but it's not tremendous. When these individuals come in here and they get front in line and they continue to commit their crimes because this is what they know, shame on us.
Yeah, shame on us. And we know better and we can do something about it. And some people are. So I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yes.
I know Austin Knutson, Department of Justice, our AG,
yes,
has been one who is not letting this rest or not overlooking this impact in our communities and pushing forward. And I appreciate that, Austin, very much. I'm going to take this call. It's kind of related to this message as well. Skip is listening in Hamilton, KLYQ country. Good morning, Skip. You're on the air with Stacy Zinn.
Well, thank you, Tom. And thanks for coming on, ma'am. It's always refreshing. I've heard you a couple of times on the air, and refreshing to hear you're very impactful. I just wanted to tell you, Tom, that on the break on the news, I heard that Greg Overstreet, who was on your show, his bill to make rodeo the state sport has to now be just signed by the governor.
Yeah.
And remember, I told you I thought the state sport should be litigation, not rodeo. But meanwhile, Ma'am, I was curious because of all of the subject matter that you cover and the way that you cover it, and it's so complete, comprehensive. Is there a schedule that you have where you go and speak, and especially to groups if there was time to bring a group together, especially I'm going to suggest young people, young couples, high school and up, that you could speak to, so that you could have them thinking with all those tools that you bring, have them those tools in their pouch after you were done with, say, an interactive lecture hall. I just thought I'd ask that because even when you ran for office, you were talking often about a lot of subject matter that it penetrates when you speak. So I just thought I'd tell you that in case there was a way for people to be able to get a hold of you and bring you to town to do a talk. I'll leave it at that. And thank you, Tom, very much. And thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Skip. This can be done. That ties in with this text message as well. Good morning. Your show today is excellent. Thank you. That's a compliment to you, Stacy. Wish she could come into small communities where everyone trusts everyone and their kindness does not allow them to spot dangerous situations. I think that brings up an interesting point as well. You are available to talk, and we'll get your email address out there as well, so you guys get ready to write that down. But coming into the communities and the things that you're saying, they're not going to sit well with everybody. They should shake people up a little bit.
Correct.
What should be their response if they invite you in? And this texter, thank you for that. I mean, that's an interesting dynamic there, that you've got a small community and you tend to trust. And so you might wait until the last moment or the wrong moment to bring this to somebody's attention. It might be too late at that point.
Well, the word profile, I'm going to throw that out there, and it always gets everyone the heebie-jeebies. And the reason why I say that is because profile can be a dirty name that was used in the past of, you can't profile.
Yeah.
We look at the Israelis. They do a great job of profiling, and look, they are still standing and surviving, regardless of what you think about that country. But what you have to do is actually profile. And it doesn't mean you're a racist. It means if you see an elephant walking down the street on Main Street, you go, hey, there's an elephant. What's it doing here? Now, if it's a pink one, then you ratchet it up. But you get what I'm trying to say. If there's something that doesn't fit and you're like, there's something that's inside me going, I need to call someone, pick up the phone and call the sheriff or call someone that you trust and say, hey, you know, do you see what I'm seeing? Because if you see something, you say something. Now, if someone else doesn't follow up on it, then that's shame on them. But at least you communicate it. And that's what I want to tell these individuals, is that, hey, it's okay to call a spade. It's okay to point out the elephant that's walking down the street.
There is discretion involved in that, right? And so you check your spirit about it. And so I would trust that in a lot of ways, too. Because you can be a tattletale and you can, do some harm with that, but don't hesitate if you've got a check on your spirit to say, look, I want to talk to somebody about, we're a lot better. I think we, being a society, we've learned some lessons
about ignoring
facts in our lives. And so I think we're a little more open to that. Let me get this address out, this email address coming up on a break. It's LIL SDZ, Stacy Diane Zinn. So LIL SDZ at AOL.com. Here with Stacy Zinn, the former director of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency operations in Montana. Stacy, again, appreciate your expertise. And we're having a conversation in the studio here as well. And I want to get to that because we've spent the last couple of minutes talking about it. And Cody Ross, here, use my mic, or is it yours on?
I'm mine.
Okay,
I'm
good. Share some of that you were talking about. You're the father of a young child.
Mm-hmm.
And she has questions about, they're dealing with things, like you said, that were not on our plates at that young age.
Yes, exactly. Because, and I don't know why, but I guess it's just the days that we're living in. And so I was happy to hear that Stacy went down, southeastern Montana and was talking to some kindergartners. And I was hoping, yes, that she'd be able to get to other schools and be able to talk and share there's things out there that people, you know, want to hurt kids or take advantage of them in a way, I guess. And so she'll come home with questions like, I'm not ready to talk about that, but Daddy did say, I will talk to you about anything you ask me. Yep. I'm not forcing anything or trying to take her down a path. I just, you ask a question, I'll answer it. And that's not a good choice. And I try to teach her that people make bad choices, and she'll make a choice. And I say, that was a bad choice. Let's not do that again. And so I don't know, you know, where I guess you want me to go with that, but
no,
the kids, they've learned so much more. Even on, she'll go on like, you know, some online games, and she's like, Daddy, I got a new friend. I'm like, okay, but be careful. Don't talk to that person because you don't know who they are. They could be somebody my age trying to take advantage of you, get to, you know, to know you and take advantage of you and hurt you someday. So don't, but you know, that's the struggles that they're having to deal with. And I can't believe it.
I feel really, really sad and tied up inside about that, because when we were growing up, it was mud pies and spitballs and, you know, biking around the neighborhood and fishing. And it's a whole different world nowadays. Yeah. And so be encouraged, folks, though, that it's still a good world and a good place. But Jess, Stacy, you know, what's your comment on that?
Well, we're just highlighting.
Oops, sorry. Get that switched over. Go ahead.
We're just highlighting.
Oops. I got Cody by surprise here because we are switching a little microphone. Good. Thank you very much.
We're just highlighting how to communicate with your little ones and stuff like that. And here's the thing is that we don't want to scare people out there. We just want them to start communicating better. And unfortunately, we have to communicate better to understand what's happening in your child's life, what's happening in your teenager's life, who they're hanging out with, who they are speaking with. The cell phones are, you know, they are a tool that's needed, but they're also our enemy in some things. With the internet, the social media, the apps, there are people that are trying to get to our kids, to get to our loved ones, and cause them harm. There's no sugarcoating it. It's a way of life now. It's unfortunate.
And I appreciate that we don't have to sugarcoat it. We can be honest about it with our kids. Of course, you know, too much information can be too much information. Mm-hmm. But I think it's changing us in a way. The way that we are open with each other when it comes to these sorts of challenges. They used to be, you know. You had a family situation going on, your family dealt with it. Well, nowadays, I think there's more acceptance of receiving help from other venues like that.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. But it's funny you say that, because as a former special agent, I would go into a town and I would look immediately of all the negative. I would see, okay, I would scan, I would profile, I would take a look and say, okay, where are the pitfalls and stuff? Mm-hmm. I didn't see the good of the community. Being away from DEA for a period of time, I'm able to bring that lightness back in.
Yeah.
But then I'll catch myself of getting too light, you know, light footed, like, okay, wait a minute, gotta put that hat back on. You know, especially I'm going in certain areas of Billings, but I hate to say that. But yes, there's a balance. There is a balance, and we had to find that balance.
What I want to get back, you know, you tackled the Taliban, you were over there internationally, numerous deployments fighting the drug trade there as well. The cartels on the border here as well for U.S. and Mexico. Talk about some of those experiences in terms of, I guess, how the drug trade has changed now. That's what we're talking about, how everything is changed in a lot of ways. And what's your experience tell you about that?
With the cartels, they're starting to get more ruthless. And I equate that because they forgot their past. And what do I mean that? About that, if you ever see the show Narcos, you can see how DEA operated in the foreign arena. In Mexico, 1985, we had Special Agent Kiki Camarena killed because he was uncovered a new marijuana plant that was being crossbred. The Guadalajara cartel didn't take that sitting down. They just the U.S. forces, well, I shouldn't say U.S. forces, the Mexican forces, along with DEA, destroyed millions of dollars worth of marijuana plants. Long story short, Guadalajara cartel kidnapped Kiki, tortured him for 3 days. They recorded it. We got 2 days of those recordings. They buried him, and we eventually got his body back and gave him a proper burial. My point of this is that that at the time the cartels were called a federation, and they were like a company where they had the CEO, they had the banking side, they had the transporters. They ran like a corporation. When Kiki was killed, that corporation started destructing because people started to get arresting. Then you had new cartels spring up from that. These people, individuals, narcos, were trying to prove themselves, so they ratcheted up. They started seeing more bloodshed. They started vying for position. This is what's happening now. Fast forward today, because now the spotlight's on Sinaloa and CJNG. You have these other little cartels that are starting to try to gain power because they're in the shadows of CJNG and Sinaloa. And what they're going to do is start one-upping. They're going to lay out, like we're starting to see, lay out explosive IEDs, explosive devices on the Mexican side. They're going to start flying more drones on the southwest border that they can, you know, can carry a grenade or carry something that's going to harm the U.S. citizens. They're going to start fighting back. That's what I suspect they'll do. My fear is that they're going to team up. They've already teamed up with Hezbollah and Hamas to a certain degree. My fear is that if they get coordinated enough, then these terrorist organizations that are sitting down in South America, because we have a hodgepodge of them, then they're going to maybe join forces and then cause harm. It depends on how they take the Trump administration, if they really believe that Trump will react the way he should react.
I'm liking this because I think it takes some bold activity. I'm trying to recall a movie I was watching last night, but it was a war movie. It was Midway, and it was after Pearl Harbor when the Japanese just slammed us at Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. There was a battle at Midway that really turned the tide early in that, especially in the Pacific arena. But I'm thinking about the Doolittle campaign is when they initiated bomber runs from a carrier to bomb the capital of Japan in response. It put, you know, the fear of reprisal back into Japan. All that to say is there was a bold move. There was a bold decision to fight back in that regard. And it wasn't always popular, and they had to fight to be able to, you know, trust that intelligence. I see some of that necessary in this country right now. And I think the border is a fine example of that. And so I appreciate, although maybe this president has a very heavy hand, I appreciate that there's a bold decision now being made to enforce our laws in this country.
You have to. And by labeling them a terrorist organization, that had to be done. If you label now, the next step is labeling Mexico a narco state. Mm-hmm. And that's going to cause, there'll be a lot of screaming out over that one because of the trade. But Mexico needs to take care of their mess, and they're not doing it. So the United States is going to have to do it. And we can get in a whole separate argument. But if those individuals are coming into our land and causing addiction problems, are causing crime to go up, are poisoning our communities, then it's enough is enough. And now it's not just Mexico. The Chinese are fully, it's they're interwoven. And there's a huge problem with that, with the Chinese coordinating with the cartels, and they're silently, they're not shooting us with bullets. They're killing us with fentanyl pills.
Yeah.
And that's a whole different conversation that we can get into. That's a whole nother hour.
That's the art of war for those guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it is. Stacy Zinn is with us here. Again, a former candidate for Congress as well, and a former director of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency operations in Montana. You want to reach out to her. She's now doing a lot of speaking. Her newest engagement is going to be this Saturday, March 29th, at the Best Western Clock Tower in Billings. They have a seminar, Montana Agri Women, and you shared what you're going to be talking about there. I think that's going to be real interesting. So contact them, but that's going on now. It's Lil SDZ, which is kind of a family name, as a matter of fact.
Yes. Stacey.
Yeah. Lil SDZ at AOL.com if you want to get in touch for more. Arnold, listening on KQDI in Great Falls. I hope you're well, sir. Thanks for calling in today.
You bet. I don't think there will be any change in the criminal activity until there's sufficient punishment to deter the crime. And there's no deterrence to smuggling or selling drugs in this country. And I don't think, as near as I can tell, there's never been a person executed for selling or dealing drugs. Mm-hmm. Therefore, if we don't initiate a policy upon the first felony conviction of smuggling or dealing drugs in this country, they're executed. The rest is all a joke. It'll just continue because there's too much money and no deterrence to deter the crime.
Arnold, I appreciate that. Have you shared that with somebody locally there? Have you shared that with your local law enforcement or your local representative?
Yes, I have.
Thank
and,
you.
And I kind of get an opinion that, well, we don't do that in this country, and therefore that would be probably a severe punishment. But until there's a deterrence, nothing will change.
Yeah, thank you for pushing that forward, Arnold, and thank you for calling in here as well. Stacey, you know, you can tell in Arnold's voice as well the frustration.
Oh, absolutely.
About this
yes.
as well.
Yes, yeah. It's frustrating for law enforcement because when you are rearresting an individual, sometimes twice in one night, some of our local PD that is currently doing, it gets very demoralizing and stuff. And when you see where you have different administrations, different politicians who allow the rules to apply to some and not to others, that's discouraging stuff. So there has to be, you know, the best way to get away from this is right, is pain. And if you conflict pain, people will run away from pain.
Yeah.
The question is what kind of pain do you, you know, inflict?
Yeah. I think that's very fair to talk about. You know, I wanted to chat about your experiences on the campaign trail. We don't have enough time for that right now. So I'm just going to finish up here, you know, with, again, that the good news here is that, you know, people like you have experience you're wanting to share. There are lots of people out there who are willing to hear that nowadays. I think in kind of wrapping that up, you know, what does encourage you about this drug fight, this drug battle?
That people are waking up, that people are starting to realize, hey, maybe we shouldn't have legalized marijuana, or maybe we should be a little bit more responsible with that drug, or maybe we should start communicating with their kids, or they're actually sitting down and having conversations and learning more about what's happening in that child's life. Parents, be parents. Teachers, be teachers. Guardians, grandmothers, whatever. If you have a loved one that's in your household, get in that person's business. You know, I say that tongue in cheek, but really know what that individual is doing in order to keep that person from harm.
Yeah, I appreciate that too, because it still is on us. It still is our country. These are our representatives and our law enforcement officers. We need to help them and be a part of that. What do you do for fun? I've only got like about a minute left here. So,
We got the women's race coming up. I like to run, so I will be running in a couple events and stuff like that. I am actually trying to write a book, but I'm dragging my feet. So I'm trying to, you know, write down things that have happened in my past without getting slapped by the government saying, you can't say that in a book. But anyway, that's what I'm doing right now.
Well, I suppose you've got to go check with your former employer about what I can say. So
dos míos, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And those books, so I've read a number of those books, kind of tell all books, or so to speak, the inside story. They're very fascinating in my mind. What's the main theme of your book?
I want to empower women. Mm. And I'm trying to figure out how to weed that in there of encouraging, because I'm 5'2", 3/4", and
no,
you know,
kidding.
Hispanic female that got into DEA, and everyone kind of looked at me going, what are you doing? I was a bodyguard prior to that. So I've done things that it's outside the box. I want to let other women know they can do the same thing.
Yeah, I really appreciate you coming in, and I really appreciate what you have done for the public as well. I know it's in your heart.
Ah, thank you.
Thank you for that. Yeah, good luck, and you know, you're always welcome.
Yeah, just call me.
I know. You got it. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.